that, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please, the court, counsel. My name is Stu Dornan. To give you a brief background as to how we ended up here, Mr. Mohammed Abdul Qadir was convicted of second-degree murder, was sentenced to a life-to-life sentence plus a 15 to 25-year consecutive for use of a weapon. His petition for post-conviction relief is really the last gasp that he has for trying to set aside his conviction. And the issue that the trial court found is that in his motion he did not present factual allegations that would warrant belief that he was denied the effective assistance of counsel, primarily because a witness by the name of El Tio Plater was not called to testify on his behalf.
Do you think that the motion for post-conviction relief adequately describes the claim that he was defending himself? Defending himself.
Yeah, I think it would have helped if it would have been more specific. But if you take a look at the case of State versus Branch, you have to take a look at the entire record and files in this matter. And the key to this is Mr. Mohammed Abdul's testimony at trial with respect to the issue of self-defense. And I would suggest that the trial court, when it said that what Mr. Plater would say would not add or detract, was incorrect. This is why. Mr. Abdul Qadir has got to show that he was justified in acting in self-defense. A number of things. One, he has to show that he wasn't provoked. And the record at trial indicates that there was no reason why Mr. Grandin, who's the victim in this matter, no reason for him to be down at the end of the cell block where Mr. Abdul Qadir was. I would say that the culture of the penitentiary would be if Mr. Grandin was accused and he knew that Mr. Abdul Qadir had accused him of theft, that was something that he needed to address and rectify. So you have the instance of where Mr. Abdul Qadir testified that he left his cell. He left the sanctuary of his cell. And when he left the sanctuary of his cell, he was sucker punched by Mr. Grandin, cold cocked. And that's very important with respect to the issue of provocation, because Mr. Plater would have testified that he observed the fist fight, fist against Mr. Abdul Qadir's head, and that he also observed a number of serial acts of violence that Mr. Grandin committed against Mr. Abdul Qadir. First one, of course, is hitting him. Second one is putting him in a chokehold as he used a knife. That's very important with respect to the issue of self-defense, because obviously you have to show that you believe you were in imminent fear of death or serious bodily injury. You can't get much more graphic than that.
Well, if he's holding Qadir in a chokehold, what's the purpose of the knife? Wouldn't Grandin be stabbing the guy at that point in time with the knife?
Well, I guess from a physical standpoint, if you're able to place somebody in a position where they're gasping for breath and place them in a very defensive position, that would further your ability to take affirmative action against them. So you have a witness here who says that he saw that. And
why would Plater's testimony not be cumulative? And what is ultimately, didn't the judge say there's no prejudice here?
He did. It's not cumulative. I guess if you look at the big picture, Judge, you have one witness, Mr. Abdul Qadir, who has a lot of interest in his testimony, obviously. He has a life sentence. Looking over his head. Mr. Plater, if you look at the credibility instruction that was given and the issue of the weight of the evidence, You have Mr. Plater, who has no interest in this case. He doesn't, he's not there to please the prosecutor. No evidence of bias or unfairness as part of the jury instruction. He's a fellow inmate. You have a source of information as part of that jury instruction of somebody who not only saw what took place, but knew what took place. So you have...
I beg your pardon, who saw what took place at the commencement of the incident?
That's correct.
Did they have anybody else who's a witness to what took place at the commencement of the incident?
Mr. Abdul Qadir.
Not the corrections officer.
Corrections
officers.
I'm
a little confused, but evidently at least one of them, the view was blocked.
Yeah, their testimony was towards the end of the incident.
Okay.
Not at the beginning. So what you really have, in response to your question, Judge, is Mr. Plater providing consistent information, consistent other evidence that bolstered what Mr. Abdul Qadir was saying. And that's very important concerning the elements that he has to show to justify the use of self-defense.
You're saying this is corroborative testimony, then?
Corroborative, consistent testimony.
But wasn't there other corroborative testimony?
With respect to the what happened after the what Mr. Abdul Qadir said?
Yes.
Yeah, there was, Judge. But the important part of this is there was nobody there who could bolster what Mr. Abdul Qadir said prior to leading into this incident.
So you want more testimony other than the defendants as to the leading edge of the incident?
Correct. When you talk about corroborative evidence, you have a statement by Mr. Abdul Qadir, two statements to the effect that, well, he's not going to steal from me and I would do it again. You know, that I guess you could look at that as also puffery with respect to the final result here in a prison setting, but it doesn't go to those three elements. Was he provoked? Was he in danger of imminent serious bodily injury or death? Yes. And thirdly, did he have the opportunity to withdraw? One of the interesting parts of the record is that that wasn't the only knife or shank that was found in that area. There were a lot of them. So if there's one shank, maybe there's another one. So that goes to the issue of whether or not he had the opportunity to withdraw.
The motion alleged both Mr. Plater and a corrections officer, but at one of these hearings to decide whether there was going to be an evidentiary hearing, Mr. Abdul Qadir essentially confessed or conceded. The corrections officer didn't add anything.
Yeah.
Well, so you're relying on Plater today?
Correct, Your Honor.
And with respect to Plater, what allegations of prejudice are there in the motion?
Well, the prejudice would be that if
I'm not asking you to tell me what the prejudice would be. What I'm asking is, did the motion allege prejudice? And if so, what did it say about prejudice?
Yes, sir. The motion said that Mr. Abdul Qadir requested his counsel to call these two witnesses, and they were not called.
And that's deficient performance, perhaps. What's the prejudice that follows it in the motion?
Prejudice is that if Mr. Plater had been allowed to testify, that would have bolstered testimony of Mr. Abdul Qadir, which would have led to a reasonable probability of a different outcome.
And that's alleged in the motion?
Well, it's not alleged. Those exact words. But I think there's enough in there to get that was the question. That was the claim that Mr. Abdul Qadir was alleging.
So let me be sure that I understand. Essentially, the way I'm reading this, there was no allegation of prejudice at all. There was an allegation that the witness would have testified to something different. Are we then, every time someone in a motion for post-conviction relief alleges that a witness would have testified to something different, that we are to infer prejudice?
Well, that's a fair question. As I look at the motion, he does say that he would provide testimony that would be favorable to the defendant. And favorable to the defendant would mean that if that testimony had been introduced, that there would have been enough there to provide a reasonable probability that the result of the jury would have been different. That's the best way I can.
Do you think you're going to find that definition of favorable in any dictionary? Okay, fair enough.
If there are no more questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning.
May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, the District Court held a hearing to determine whether there should be an evidentiary hearing on June 2nd, and at that time, that was actually a hearing on the state's motion to dismiss the case and deny an evidentiary hearing. They decided at that point to continue the hearing for 2 months to give the defendant time to try and locate the two witnesses whose testimony he alleged would be useful to him in his petition. Well, ultimately, they found the prison guard somewhere in Florida, and after talking with him, apparently they decided he wasn't going to say what they alleged he was going to say, and he was not, nothing more basically was heard from him. And for the rest of the time until the case was dismissed, they were essentially chasing LTO Plater around, who had warrants. He was on parole, and he was also had warrants out for his arrest as a result of a child support neglect, and he was making himself apparently quite scarce. Even if they had found LTO Plater, assuming what they alleged in the petition was what he would say, there would have been no reason to have the evidentiary hearing because what he said was entirely cumulative of what the evidence was at trial. Self-defense was the entire issue at the trial. That's what the whole thing was about. And ultimately, the jury rejected both the charge of first-degree murder, which was what he was originally charged with, convicted him of second-degree murder, and found that he had not acted in self-defense. The evidence essentially showed that, I don't think there's really any dispute that Grandin was the aggressor, but as Abdul Qadir essentially turned the tables, got the knife away from him, and went far above and beyond defending himself and actually became the aggressor. He stabbed Grandin 25, I believe it was, times, even after he was down on the ground screaming for help. That was witnessed by a number of the guards who testified at the trial. That's not self-defense at that point. That's aggression. That's second-degree murder, which is what he was convicted of.
Did anyone testify to corroborate Abdul Qadir's side of the story?
Portions of it essentially were corroborated by some of the prison guard testimony. Now, I don't believe any of the prison guards saw the actual initiation of the fight because, curiously, the one man who was in a position to see that, McFarland, I believe was his name, was in what they call the bubble, said that there were four inmates standing essentially in an impenetrable wall in front of him so he could not see down the hall to observe what was going on. He told them to disperse, and they took their sweet time about doing so, and by the time they had gotten out of the way so he could see what was going on, the fight was in progress. I don't believe any of the other guards were in a position to actually see the...
Any of the other inmates testify?
Not to the best of my recollection. I think there may have been a couple that testified as to, not as to the fight, but as to prior contact between Abdul Qadir and Grandin. Somebody had informed Abdul Qadir that Grandin was a person stealing his items, and that's why the entire incident... Abdul Qadir sought out Grandin to ask him about it. Grandin said he had no involvement in it, and then shortly thereafter, Grandin essentially attacked him, and the events ensued.
Does the state believe that there were allegations of prejudice in this motion?
I don't think so, no. I think there clearly was a deficient performance alleged in that these two witnesses who were requested to be called to trial were not called, apparently with the respect to the prison guard, that was probably just as well that he wasn't. Deficient performance, assuming in fact he had requested these people to be to testify in his behalf, that's only, as you note, half the equation. There are no allegations of prejudice, and even if we were to assume that there were, given what was alleged that LTO Plater would testify to, prejudice, he was not prejudiced by the lack of that testimony because it would essentially add nothing to this case. It may bolster or corroborate, but I'm not sure that a lack of bolstering or corroboration makes it a constitutional violation not to have called these people and thus prejudiced his case at the trial level. The testimony about what happened was presented to the jury, who essentially chose to reject it in light of all the testimony and found the defendant guilty of second-degree murder. I believe the district court properly denied the evidentiary hearing in this case and dismissed it without one as a result of the way the events shook out in this particular case, and unless there are additional questions, we would ask that the ruling of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
He is over.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Adams versus Board of Parole. Justice Stacy is recused in this matter. The court will be joined by Judge Reedman of the Court of Appeals.